Welcome to our August meeting, and I hope everybody's doing all right with the hot weather and looking forward to a few degrees cooler, and then I guess it's going to heat up again. So, anyway, our summer is here. Let's start with our roll call. And let's start with Brian Scarlett Fisher.
Here.
Okay. Chad Williams.
Yep, I'm here. Thanks.
Okay. Elma Bloom. I see her. Emily Estes. I don't see Emily yet. Franklin Johnson. Jeannie Mills Goodling. Dr. Fisher. Dr. Doppin.
I'm here.
Yep. Dr. Trong.
I'm here.
I think we know you're here. Lori Schott.
Present.
Lori Lynn Lord. Mark Collier. Marla.
I'm here. Yeah.
Michael Watkins.
I'm here. Good evening.
Good evening. Paul Childers. Robert Ferrier.
I'm here.
Yep. I'm here, Sandy Brown. Scott Johnson.
Yep, I'm here.
Tracy Fernandez.
Here.
Tyler Clary.
He's here. He's having sound issues.
I see, yeah. Councillor Fuentes.
Here.
Dr. Melnick.
I'm here.
You're here. Andrea Pruitt.
Here.
Okay. Danette York.
Here.
Jerry Preston. Jeff Harbison.
I'm here.
From Hawaii, huh?
Yeah, I wish.
Dr. Brianna De Silvia Batia.
Hello, I'm here.
Thank you. Haley Pickus.
I'm here.
And Jonathan Yu, is that right? I know that's not
Oh,
right.
it's ooey.
Ooh, all right. Thank you. All right. Is there anyone I missed? Okay. As usual, Mallory sent out a nice complete list of the minutes from last month's meeting. And does anybody have any additions or corrections to those minutes? If not, I need to entertain a motion and a second to approve our minutes.
So moved to approve.
Second.
Second.
Okay, thank you. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, the minutes for the July meeting are approved. All right, our first agenda item tonight comes from Haley around the prenatal access care update. Good to see you again, Haley.
Hi. Mallory, do you have the slides? Oh, there you are. I was looking for you on my screen. You're right next to me. I'll get started while Mallory's pulling those up. My name is Haley Pickus. I'm the Family Initiatives Coordinator with our Life Course program. It's great to see a lot of your faces again. I'm going to provide this update, but I'll invite any of my colleagues on the call who've also been working on this issue. Feel free to chime in or add any additional context. I'm going to provide a brief update on the department's progress since the April FAC meeting, where Andrea presented prenatal access to care challenges among Clark County Apple Health clients or Medicaid. I'll conclude with an overview of next steps that the Board of Health and FAC can anticipate through the end of the year and the start of the next legislative session in January. But before we jump in, I just want to note the context within which this work is happening. With the federal passage of H.R. 1 on July 4th, our state Medicaid program, known as Apple Health, and many of the over 126,000 Clark County community members who are covered by it are at risk of losing health insurance. The state exchange and private marketplace will also be impacted, further compounding coverage losses. We do not yet know the full extent of the predicted impact to our state or our community. Over the next year and a half, the state of Washington is tasked with redesigning the Apple Health program given these new fiscal realities and programmatic requirements. And we're adamant that local voice is critical in the redesign process so that community members are not left behind as the legislature makes decisions and the healthcare authority implements their direction. So we just don't think this is the time to sit back or to think small. You can go to the next slide, Mallory. So now I'd like to share, what else, other than the passage of that bill, has happened since we last met. At the Board of Health direction and with the support of Chair Marshall and FAC, we convened a policy summit on June 9th. Over 40 attendees, including two FAC members, met in a hybrid environment, including members of our local delegation, the governor's office, a policy staffer from Congresswoman Perez, Guzencamp Perez's office, as well as staff, leadership, and technical experts from our local health jurisdiction partners, the healthcare authority, the Department of Health, the Office of the Insurance Commissioner, and the Office of Financial Management. The interrelated system components that arose from that summit have guided our actions in the interim. The kind of three themes that really rose to the top that day were around the current payment model for maternity care, workforce impacts, and network adequacy, with sort of an overarching theme around data quality and transparency. Actions are needed at the state and federal levels to improve prenatal care access locally. Sorry if you can hear my dog barking in the background. While Clark County cannot change state or federal policy, we continue to elevate experiences of community members and providers, as well as talk to elected officials about opportunities for system improvements. And we will continue to push for change at the state level, though to move forward, any policy concept will require the technical capacity and support of our state agencies and allied partners to design sound proposals, as well as sponsorship from state elected officials. Since the policy summit, Chair Marshall and our CCPH leadership met with Senator Annette Cleveland, Chair of the Health and Long-Term Care Committee, to debrief, and we continue to seek time with other reps from our Clark County delegation. Along with the County Council's senior policy analyst, Jordan Bogie, our team met with Governor Ferguson's senior health policy advisor, and we anticipate ongoing conversations, including the opportunity to support a healthcare access roundtable convening later this fall in Clark County. Congresswoman Perez's office recently outreached to us, and we look forward to engaging with her in the coming weeks around work at the federal level. And additionally, we're in regular ongoing communication with the Department of Health and the Healthcare Authority around this issue. We are also looking towards local options for improvement. In early September, Public Health is convening local system providers to discuss an evidence-based group prenatal care model. We are also looking at efforts to improve obstetrical care quality data through the State Foundation for Healthcare Quality and assessing what implementation supported by public health staff could look like within our two hospitals and among community-based providers based on what other states are implementing. We continue to monitor care coordination efforts and prioritize connecting with maternity care providers, community-based midwives, doulas, and community health workers to document the ongoing access gaps, including at our federally qualified health center here in Clark County. Our efforts are also spurring action in other counties across Washington. We will continue to partner with local health jurisdictions, including Kitsap, Seattle King County, and Tacoma Pierce, to identify opportunities for collaboration and also to elevate this issue through WSLFO, the Washington State Association of Local Public Health Officials. And then lastly, and importantly, we're partnering with the local chapters of the Pacific Islander Community Association of Washington, or PICOWA, and the Pacific Islander Health Board to support their priorities around outreach and education for pregnant and parenting Pacific Islander communities. Next slide, please, Mallory. So this brings us to next steps. At the direction of the Board of Health, we're drafting a resolution on this topic for their consideration at the September meeting. Additionally, we'll flesh out the action items from that resolution into a shared work plan that FAC and the Board of Health can participate in. In October and November, we hope to support the compilation of a Board of Health legislative agenda on this access to care item. And lastly, we'll keep you all updated on how the FAC and Board of Health can support getting many of those local efforts that I mentioned off the ground. So with that, I'm happy to elaborate further on any of these items or answer any questions. And also say, Dr. Melnick or Andrea, if you have anything that you'd like to add, please feel free.
I just want to say thank you for that summary, the update, and for all of the work that you've done leading this initiative and effort in partnership with Melissa Martin and your peer group across the state. It's really incredible.
I should have mentioned Melissa, our Life Course Program Manager, will be giving this very similar update to the Board of Health tomorrow morning. But I wanted to see everyone at FAC, so. Okay, well, we look forward to continued partnership on this work.
Great update, Haley. I'm excited about where it's going and the progress that's been made. So thank you and good to see you again.
Let me echo that great work, Haley and your team.
All right. Well, next on our agenda is CHA and CHIP update that's going to be given by Jonathan Yui. I'm going to turn it over to you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Armand. Yep, there's the slides. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. As I said, my name is Jonathan Yui, and I'm the Strategic Initiatives Coordinator at Clark County Public Health on the Healthy Health Assessment and Evaluation Team. And today I'm here to give a quick overview and update on the Clark County Community Health Improvement Plan, or CHIP. Next slide, please. So the objectives for this presentation are, one, to give a brief background on the CHIP purpose, process, and priorities. Two, to provide a progress report by the priority areas that I will discuss a little bit later on. And three, to share some successes, updates, and opportunities for aligning efforts in the near future. Next slide, please. Thank you. So the use of a standardized and evidence-based process to guide the development and implementation of an improvement plan is a generally accepted best practice used by government agencies, anchor institutions like nonprofit hospitals, and community-based organizations. In many cases, developing an improvement plan is required, like in the case of a county comprehensive plan. So for our CHIP, the process comes from the National Association of County and City Health Officials, their Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnership 2.0 framework, or MAP 2.0. I'm not going to go through the entire process. It is pretty lengthy, but here you can see an overview of the steps in the process and the foundational principles that guide it. And I would like to highlight that this is built upon community partnerships, tells the community story through the Community Health Assessment, or CHA, which I'll talk a little bit more about later, and it mobilizes the community to take action. So that's a lot of community in there, and you're going to hear me talk a lot about community today. So the MAP framework is designed as a community-led process whose purpose is to catalyze partnerships, momentum, and progress towards the community's vision for health. Our process is driven by our steering committee, which represents a diverse group of leaders from different sectors of Clark County, such as community-based organizations, health providers, education and mental health nonprofits, and others. And I also want to emphasize that this is a continuous and flexible process. The CHIP adapts to the current needs of the community and conducts ongoing evaluation to ensure that we are working as efficiently and effectively as possible. It is not a static plan to follow, but a guide and lens to better understand what is important to our community and how we can address its needs. Next slide, please. So the ultimate goal of the CHIP is to ensure that in Clark County, families and people of all ages, abilities, races, and cultures are supported to be healthy and live, learn, work, and play in thriving, well-resourced communities. So to that end, this improvement plan was developed by partners in collaboration with local public health staff using data and the community experience to set priorities, coordinate actions, and target resources to improve health. So this process ensures that the priorities and goals identified by the community have meaning and value to those who inform the CHIP, those implementing it, and those whose lives the CHIP aims to affect. Research tells us that when communities have a say, there is an increased likelihood for changes in health outcomes. And to further emphasize the importance of the CHIP, I would like to paint a quick picture of a world where we do not have it. Organizations would be working in silos, duplicating their efforts, and wouldn't have a space to convene, share ideas, and open up opportunities to collaborate. Work done by Clark County Public Health would lack community voice, and it would remain a top-down approach to public health. And there would be much less drive for action without an element of community accountability. And like many of the best thought out plans, it would sit on the shelf and never see implementation. Next slide, please. So before I talk about the direction we've chosen for the CHIP, I want to first provide some background on how we got here. So in the Community Health Assessment, or the CHA, we tell the story through a combination of demographic data, community partner survey, community member focus groups, review of secondary data sources, reports, and assessments, among other resources. So from the data gathered, these seven topics came up as important issues for the community to address. Our team presented these finding areas to our steering committee, which was in part chosen from various groups and organizations who have expertise in these areas. This committee underwent a prioritization and planning process based on criteria such as data comparisons to the state average, among many other considerations. And you can read more about the full process in the CHIP document. However, I do want to emphasize that feasibility was an important consideration and is an important consideration now, and included questions such as whether there are adequate resources available to address the issue, is the community ready to address the issue, are partner organizations ready to address the issue, and if there are other actors in the community already advocating for this issue. Next slide, please. So after consensus was reached on the results of the prioritization process, the committee decided on three priority areas and also made the decision to elevate a cross-cutting racial equity, civic engagement, groundwater approach priority. So the three domain priorities decided on are education and investment to youth, mental health, and community connection and care. So the groundwater approach is a concept from the Racial Equity Institute that, and I quote, helps leaders confront the reality that all our systems, institutions, and outcomes emanate from the racial hierarchy on which the United States was built. In other words, we have a groundwater problem and we need groundwater solutions, end quote. So this is an important lens through which we must look at all the work that we are doing to ensure that we are dismantling the inequities embedded in the systems that we rely on and that we are addressing the root causes of a lot of these issues. And so how we hope to move towards these improvement plan priorities is embedded in the goals that we'll talk about soon. And we also have a link on our slides to learn more about the groundwater approach if that's something that interests you. Next slide, please. So as a quick recap, our team completed the community health assessment in 2023 to tell the community story and identify concerns. So we then shared these findings with the community and discussed improvement opportunities to identify possible next steps. After that, we expanded our steering committee to prioritize these areas of concern, set out goals for the work, and ultimately created the strategic plan that is the CHIP. So we have now moved into our implementation phase of carrying out the strategies and actions in the CHIP and to continually monitor our progress. There has been a tremendous amount of effort put in by our team and the community so far. But as you can tell from the years on this timeline, we are just hitting the bulk of and the most difficult phase of the work now. So it is here at the action phase where most plans start to lose momentum and, you know, get to the point of collecting dust on the shelf. And that is why the support of you and this committee and support of the community is especially important at this crossroads. And finally, as you can see from the circle, the CHA-CHIP process flows back into itself. So once we have completed our work, we will begin another community health assessment. This is all part of the MAP framework that is designed to periodically assess the needs of the community and repeat the process of prioritization and strategic planning to direct the work accordingly. Next slide, please. So now that we have that background on what the CHA and the CHIP are, I would like to talk about where the CHIP is now and the direction it is going. Next slide, please. So here I'd like to present our theory of change, which utilizes process-based contribution efforts to drive changes in health outcomes. And central to this theory is that civic engagement and health are interconnected at all levels of community. The Healthy People 2030 initiative found that if we increase opportunities for inclusive, racially equitable civic engagement, then this results in improved community connection, as it can increase social capital and decrease social isolation by providing a sense of belonging and empowerment. And these have been found to improve individual health outcomes on physical, emotional, and mental health. Increased civic participation has also been found to improve communities' mental health, education systems, and infrastructure, as community members can advocate for health-promoting policies that address these social determinants of health. Clark County Public Health's role in this is to bring awareness in the community to the critical connection between health and voting. Two, to promote participation in town halls, public meetings, volunteer activities, and other opportunities to educate community members on issues that will shape local policy and strengthen community cohesion, all while emphasizing that civic engagement is a year-round activity. And third, to evaluate community factors that lead to high levels of civic engagement, track the relationship between civic engagement and health, and analyze what these connections mean for health equity. Next slide, please. So we also want to highlight key events and initiatives in the community and other Clark County public health teams that align with the CHIP goals. Our CHIP evaluation team is currently monitoring and cataloging a list of more than 170 events as part of our collective attribution evaluation efforts, which will map inputs that impact progress towards CHIP goals. You already heard a lot about some of these programs that Clark County Public Health's Life Course team is doing from Haley, a lot of which aligns with the CHIP priorities, and a lot of that work predates the development of the CHIP itself. That team's work fosters civic engagement through advisory committees and work that addresses healthcare access. Another example I don't think was mentioned is that they're working with Vancouver Public School staff on ways to support the Plaza program that addresses CHIP priorities and aligns with our County Public Health strategic plan. I won't go through all of these, but there's a lot of great work that's being done, by others in the community and by some of our partner organizations and some of the organizations that are represented on our community steering committee. But I will say that the tracking done by our team is especially important now, given impacts and reductions to some historical federal and state data sets and data collection and sampling programs, such as the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, the Healthy Youth Survey, and the SMILE Survey. Next slide, please. So now I just want to talk a little bit more about where we are now and where our next steps are for the CHIP. Next slide. So my colleagues from the steering committee weren't able to join me for this presentation today, but they will be with me tomorrow when we present, this presentation at the Board of Health. But we do want to highlight some of their successes. Tanika and the YWCA Clark County have recently hosted their BIPOC Youth Summit and have an ongoing breakfast club, which is a meeting of youth mental health service providers who feel they can network and help align their efforts. And the steering committee also wanted to give the situational awareness update that, as some of the cuts that Haley was mentioning to Apple Health and some of the changes that are happening in health access, this is a great time to focus our efforts on primary prevention, upstream health issues that, can save a lot of costs in the future. We also want to offer for this committee and the Board of Health to consult the community steering committee members for population health dialogues, including and beyond priority areas identified in the CHIP. Next slide, please. And so I do want to highlight some of the things that our steering committee has highlighted as a priority area of focus. So they, you know, specifically single out goal two. This, you know, does has a lot to do with civic engagement that we talked about in our theory of change. Goal five, the education system, and those in it are well supported with access to childcare, early interventions for youth, and plenty of safe spaces for youth within and outside of school. You know, the investment in education and the youth of our community. Also, goals six and seven, that the community feels comfortable and safe talking about mental health and utilizing mental health services, and that mental health education is in alignment with community members' cultural values. So, you know, our steering committee really highlighted that that element of safety, and which is a big thing that, you know, our committee has been hearing from their partners and their communities, that, you know, they think is a something that our community should be focused on working on, and that have they have decided to direct the CHIP. And also, you know, making sure that any of this work is aligned with cultural values, because mental health does look different based on, you know, the community and cultural context that you are in. And so to work on these, the steering committee has decided on a couple actions moving forward as we're moving towards implementation. The first is a community education campaign focused on youth and family mental health, which would include messaging and community engagement on mental health, with a focus on children and parents to promote conversations about what mental health challenges look like and what mental health looks like in different cultures. And second, thriving spaces for kids. So supporting and developing programs that create safe spaces where children connect and have a secure forum to learn about and have conversations about mental health. So these are only kind of general directions for starting implementation. And, you know, we'll be conducting more research in academic literature and also you know, doing a landscape analysis and seeing what already exists in Clark County to inform the next steps of action and to really start pushing the implementation of the CHIP and ultimately working towards the goals that we've set out for ourselves. Next slide, please. So that's my update. I would like to open it up to questions for the committee, and also if anyone from our team has anything else they'd like to add.
I just wanted to say thank you. Thought that that was amazing. I'm incredibly biased, but it's a lot of work that the steering committee is doing and that Jonathan is doing building relationships and community. So I just wanted to say I appreciated that.
Yes, thank you for such a complete report. It's exciting to see how much progress has been made and how the community is embracing some of the goals and things that you've been working on. So good job. Anybody have any other questions?
Looks like we have
Bree has her hand up.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I had a question. I was just wondering sorry, my dog is barking in the background if you can hear him. I was just going to ask whether or not you are approaching any of the local school boards with this information, or how is that communicated out? Do you know?
Are you talking about priorities within youth mental health and opportunities to connect?
Yes.
Yes. The direction that I said, that's going to be, yeah, part of the landscape analysis to determine what that looks like. And a cross-cutting partnership. And I know David Hudson is on this call as well, and we work with the school districts, and there are some concerns related to engagement and reductions in funding and capacity for Healthy Youth Survey. So drawing a circle around what we know, what we don't know, and what can we collectively do about it is going to be a part of next steps for that. Directional request by the steering committee to public health staff.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. In ESD 112 as part of those dialogues as well. And not to put you on the spot, but David, is there anything that you wanted to offer up related to the intersection of the, there's a There's a significant amount of cross-sectionality between and among internal programs in healthy communities, health assessment, evaluation, and then pursuing primary prevention initiatives and campaigns through the CHIP. And it kind of runs along a continuum of efforts. And so we have child fatality review and prevention efforts, data collection and evaluation efforts with Healthy Youth Survey, engagements through staff on the and steering committee members on the CHIP. There's work within our life course team. So it's layered.
Yeah, we're just because we're in the beginning phases of the implementation of the CHIP, our plan is to tie those priorities with the school districts and work more directly with them to address these issues.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Wow, that seems like a lot of work. This is, when you say layered, that it's an onion. So, a lot of work. I just commend you for your work. Thank you so much.
Great. Anything else?
This
Let's move on.
is Marla, and I just wanted to also express appreciation for such a great presentation and what great work is going on there. I've worked on these same initiatives at the hospital system, and I wondered, it made me wonder, and I thought about this at the time when I was doing that, how do the health care systems in our area, who are also doing this work, I believe, unless they're no longer required to, but I felt like it was essential when I was in that system. How do those organizations, and I heard the schools mentioned, interact with the work that's going on in our health department so that we can try to, as much as possible, avoid just overlap and try to make sure that we're capturing elements that cross between all of us and maybe approaching those together as opposed to each individual organization or system doing it separately?
Ooh, you're asking so many good questions. Like there are multiple people on this meeting who I think could field answers to that. I'm happy to give Dr. Malik or David first crack at
Well, I'll
it.
just say that Jonathan and I have a meeting scheduled with Legacy Health to talk about these intersections for their community needs assessment. And we've been working for years with Peace Health Southwest on their community needs assessment. So there is a connection there. And like you said, not to duplicate efforts.
And it becomes tricky because both of our nonprofit hospital systems who are required by the IRS to complete their own community health assessments are on 3-year cycles. Public health is on a five, local public health jurisdictions opt for a 5-year cycle. And this is actually the first time that Clark County Public Health has completed the assessment and the improvement plan. Most of the time, public health departments will complete the assessment, the improvement plan portion. It's really contingent on staffing resources and capacity. And we have been incredibly unfortunate or incredibly fortunate to have received an influx of funding from the Foundational Public Health Services dollars to be able to expand our ability to do the implementation-based work. Prior to this cycle, we were participating as part of a regional cohort in the Healthy Columbia Willamette Collaborative because most of the hospital systems owned by Legacy are on the other side of the river. But we found through multiple iterations and cycles of participating as part of that regional collaborative that most of the resource, most of the expert and decision-making power was on the Oregon side. So Peace Health Southwest opted out and started to do their own 3-year assessment, I think what, 2 years ahead of our process, David? And then we made the decision that we could better invest our resources and do deeper work here locally for Clark County if we moved ourselves over too. And so now Legacy Salmon Creek is interested in our process. I think the key, it's like double dutch. You got to time everything correctly because the hospital systems have timeline deliverables and report outs that don't perfectly line up with our process. All of that said, Liz Catton, who is the director of community health over at Peace Health, is a member of the steering committee and participates actively. And then I serve on Peace Health's community collaboration committee. And I will say, just a note, there's low to no risk on Peace Health's plan in terms of overlap, and they really structure their improvement planning process using their pillars, and essentially their hospital values that underpin their nonprofit system, and they're really focused on housing and nutrition and things like that. So that was another key piece that helped us winnow from the opportunity areas in the CHA to the improvement planning priorities in the CHIP, because we really didn't want to pick up pieces that were already being addressed by anchor institutions and system partners in the community.
That sounds terrific. I can really hear there's a lot of collaboration going on between the organizations that are doing this work. So thank you for bringing us up to date. That just makes my heart sing.
Well, I think Haley mentioned this, but there's also collaboration on the prenatal care initiative as well. So we have really good relationships with our healthcare partners.
Brian, you had connected us to the Pop Health People Legacy for the mammogram screening, and that's turning out to be a really fabulous conversation as well. Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff happening.
I am so glad that something happened out of that. Yay. I feel effective. Okay, I'll stop.
All right.
There's a lot of good work going on out there, so keep it up. It's very encouraging. All right. If we don't have any other questions or comments, we'll move on to a budget update from Jeff.
All right. Thank you. Good evening, everybody. Jeff Harbison, Administrative Services Director. We did submit a balanced 2026 budget a couple weeks ago. At our FAC Board of Health retreat, I talked about at that time we were eliminating only vacant positions. However, to arrive at a balanced budget, we are eliminating 9 vacant positions and 1 filled position. I will say that the reductions come from every division within public health. The 10 positions encompass 9.4 FTE. And like I said, I looked at these. We are touching every division within the agency. This is intended to be a fee update, but I wanted to talk about how we got to where we're at as far as the budget goes as well. So I'm going to share my screen. Oh, I got to send a request. All right, let me go here. Sure. All right, I'm going to go through tomorrow morning. We have the public hearing with the Board of Health on the ordinance to update our fees. I'm going to go through that presentation. You've seen some of this in the past. So again, this is for tomorrow morning. The purpose is going to be for adoption of a 2026 fee schedule ordinance by the Board of Health. We'll be going through a little bit of background and then the fee model. As you've heard in prior presentations, the environmental public health fee revenue, it funds activities in drinking water protection and drinking water operations and maintenance. I'm not going to read all these. The recreational water, our on-site programs, food safety, school health and safety. Our fees are calculated to align with just projected program expenses, less any offsetting program income. There is no profit built into these fees. This is also where I mentioned that the state auditor's office has looked at my fee schedule process on a few occasions dating back over the years, and we've been given a clean bill of health each time. From 2011 to 2018, the fees were calculated where the general fund was covering what we deemed greater good costs. So any work that was not that was not specifically related to a license, permit, or fee. Things like complaint investigations around residential waste, or someone calls about they ate at a restaurant and got sick or something. And then outbreak investigations related to foodborne illness, waterborne illness. There's obviously more greater good than that, but those are just some examples. So we used to have biennial budgets. The fee adjustment, the last fee adjustment where greater good was supplemented, was the 2017-18 biennial budget, and the fee adjustment was only 1.35%. Well, beginning in 2019, the Board of Health adopted the policy to begin to move back towards 100% cost recovery. Basically, the general fund was not going to be able to support the greater good work forever. There's budget challenges in the general fund as well. So we started that journey in 2019. That's why you see a couple of pretty large increases there, 29.13%, followed by 14.3, and then over 9 in 2021. 22 to 25, we had the same approach where all programs were at 100% cost recovery, except for drinking water protection and on-site septic permitting, which were set at 90%. You see some fairly moderate increases, 3.19 and 5.33. 2023 went down slightly. 2025, we had a adjustment of 11.69% up, primarily related to a salary realignment study. People who work in the county refer to it as the Baker-Tilly adjustment. Baker-Tilly was brought in to do a compensation analysis, and this was pretty much the result of the outcome of that. So this is our proposed 2026 fee adjustments. This is where we landed after a pretty lengthy process, beginning with one-on-ones with each Board of Health member. And then meetings with our industry, technical advisory commissions, the School Health and Safety Technical Advisory Group, and then finally a work session with the Board of Health in July. The fee model you see in front of you is what the ordinance that will be before the Board of Health tomorrow morning is based on. This is all the programs are set at 100% cost recovery. However, the fees are we're using our department fund balance. We're applying that department fund balance to limit any individual fee from going up more than 5.0%. So it's capped there. You'll see on the chart in front of you, we're actually accessing just over $779,000 of department fund balance. This will increase fee revenue by just over $176,000. I ran some numbers for tomorrow. I've gotten a couple of questions from Councillor Little at the work session. We have 135 fees in our ordinance. 113 of them are actually going up at an average of 4.68%. We have 20 going down, and they're going down an average of 12.96%. You'll see on the screen that the revenue is increasing by 3.08%. That doesn't account for like volume. That's strictly revenue. The average fee itself is going up 2.03% overall, if you look at all 135 fees. So that is the end of the presentation that I'll be giving tomorrow morning with the Board of Health. I do have a couple things related to the 2027 budget process, which we're not even a year away from having to get into, but I wanted to take questions on the 2026 budget or our fee ordinance and fee update process with the Board of Health tomorrow morning. So on the county website, I don't see any hands up, but I'm presenting, so I may not. On the county website, along with this presentation for tomorrow's hearing, is also the specific, this is the very, very granular, every single fee in the ordinance, and it shows the current fee and the proposed fee and then the variance for every program. So it's got all of that granular data. The counselors have asked for that. So it is there. And if there's no questions on the 2026 budget, we do have some information about 2027. The way the union collective bargaining agreement is designed, the 2026 cost of living adjustment or COLA, it's not in the 2026 budget because it's not calculated until July 1st. So the 2027 budget will include the 2026 COLA, the impact from that. And the way the contract is written is it will be between 2 and 4% based on the West Coast CPI. We got that number. It's 2.6%. So it's in the lower quadrant of what that could have been. So we do have some idea of what the COLA is we'll be looking at in the 2027 budget that will impact us. The other element of the 2027 budget that will make the budget a little more challenging than usual is it is the first year where we will be losing the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, support. We're using about $430,000 of that in the 2026 budget to offset systems maintenance costs. So we have three major platforms we're paying maintenance on: our environmental public health permit system, and then our electronic health record, or EHR system. Then we have a new platform for our vital records or birth and death records program. So we're using the last year of ARPA funding to cover the systems maintenance costs of those three systems. So I expect the 2027 budget process will be a little unusual beyond just standard labor cost increases. It will include the loss of ARPA as well. So just a sneak peek on what we'll be talking about in the spring when we're looking at our 2027 budget. So if there are any budget or finance questions, if I haven't put enough of you to sleep already, I am available to answer any questions you might have.
And this goes along with the statutory role of FAC in terms of providing advice to the recommendations to the Board of Health on budget, finance, fees. That's all part of it. And folks are welcome to show up tomorrow as well.
I had a question on the fee. I mean, I understand this, Tracy, sorry. I understand that they wanted to limit the fees to not go up too much, but there's got to be a point. I mean, I do budgets as well, and there's got to be a point where the cost of the services are way far outpacing the fees that, and you're going to run out of general fund dollars to fund it. Where is the meeting of the road where you say, hey, we've got to recover the cost of these fees, or we can't provide this service because you already eliminated, what, 9 positions this year? If you keep deteriorating that way, you're going to eventually spin yourself into you can't provide the service or something worse.
Yeah. This is the first year we are using our fund balance, I should say, to offset fees. This is a temporary arrangement. This is not sustainable forever. I completely agree with you. We will need to, in the 2027 budget process, we'll need to look at everything that we're facing. I will say, between Baker Tilly and then the Me Too grievance, the 2026 budget was extremely challenging with labor cost increases. The Me Too grievance, right on the heels of Baker Tilly, we're looking at double-digit labor cost increases in back-to-back years. We will have to have a pretty substantial fee increase eventually. It's not sustainable to use our fund balance to offset these fees. My approach, what I'm hoping for, is we can spend 2026, the remainder of 2025 and 2026, ensuring we are as efficient and nimble as we can be in those fee-supported programs to make sure that we are streamlined and nimble. I definitely agree with everything you said, Tracy. It's going to be something on our plate next year for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't anticipate double-digit labor cost increases again anytime soon. That would be catastrophic.
And you're all familiar with the Baker Tilly issue as well as the Me Too, correct? Okay.
Yeah, we had, I know the 2000, 26 budget. The labor costs are around 15.7% higher year over year. And I believe the Baker Tilly, it was, I want to say 12% maybe. So we've had double digit percent just salary and wage cost growth. And in 2026, our employee benefits are up like 14.69%, I believe. So it's this has been not a very fun couple of years as far as budget goes. Throw in the loss of some FPHS revenue, 175,000 reduction there.
Well, good work, Jeff. I know it's a tough road sometimes, and every year brings new set of challenges that you're always able to step up to. So good job. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Next, we have some updates. I think Dr. Melnick is going to update us on some awards dinner and a work session with the Board of Health.
So, just on Saturday evening, November 1st, there's going to be a celebration for the NAACP 80th anniversary of the Vancouver NAACP chapter, and it's going to be at the Hotel Indigo at the waterfront, so great location. It's going to be honoring all the 8 decades of resilience, excellence, and impact in the community under the theme Black Resilience, celebrating 80 years of excellence. And their NAACP is a great community partner. We've purchased 3 tables, so we have seats available for FAC members who are interested in attending. So it'll include dinner. There's an award ceremony. One of our, I think I can mention this, one of our great partners, Vanessa Gaston, who's Director of Community Services and a wonderful colleague, is going to be receiving an award. I'm looking forward to honoring her. We would be delighted to have a FAC presence at our public health tables at the NAACP annual event, 80th anniversary. You don't have to all sign up now, but you can let Mallory know, and we'll get you on the list. We have like we already have 7 mem I think eight, we have 30 seats available. I think an 8 are taken so far. Go ahead, Bree. Are you signing up? Okay.
I love these events. They are just amazing and so inspiring. And you said it's fundraising, correct?
I think they do fundraising there, but there's no obligation.
Oh, no. I mean, I like, yes.
They won't have
Sign me
the
up.
fundraising element this time, Dr. Melnick.
There will not be.
They will not, no, not
Okay,
this
thank
time
you
around.
for. I should have known that. So thank you, Councillor Fuentes.
What date did you say it was?
November 1st, it's a Saturday night. And if there are Board of Health members who need seats, we're amenable to that. We set that up as well. Councillor Fuentes.
I think 3 of us are already going, Councillor Young and Chair Marshall, including myself.
And you get to hang out with Board of Health members for those on FAC. So it's great.
I wish you would have known sooner. I
Congratulations.
wouldn't have bought it. But thank you.
Yeah, I believe I'm already attending as well because she is also on their Peace South Southwest board, and so we bought a table as well.
I miss all of you on the Peace Health Board.
We miss you too.
All right, so if anyone's interested, they can just let Mallory know over the next couple of weeks, and you'll also see it in the minutes as a reminder.
Yeah, and we need to. I'm trying to think of when we have to do the meal. The meal selection needs to be done by October 30th, I think. So I
Okay.
think that's okay.
And we have a couple of other groups that we're going to offer seats to, depending on how many are taken. So if we could set a deadline for FAC members to let us know, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, because we want to make sure we get all these seats filled for sure. And
So maybe the middle of September, would that work?
how about Friday, September 19th? Does that work?
Well, it's a long way away. Okay.
Or you could do the 12th. That's 2 weeks, two and a half.
Let's do the 12th.
Okay. I'll
And
put that in the notes.
we can get something in out to email to the FAC members as well. Not everybody's here. But yeah, if you could let us know by the 12th, that would be great.
Okay, and then there's a Board of Health FAC retreat that's going or work session that's going to be on October 21st.
And let me get my notes here. And we changed the date. I think it was originally going to be in September, and we changed the date. Am I correct?
Yes.
Jamie Bowden from WSAHPHO, she's the Washington State Association of Local Public Health Officials. You remember she presented to all of you on the two different models of Board of Health. Board of Health with non-elected members on it, with or without FAC, or Board of Health is currently constructed with only elected members with FAC. She presented to you all on not too long ago. She will be presenting at a work session with our county council, also our Board of Health, I believe on September 24th. So they'll be able to hear the same presentation you all heard. And then when we come together for the work session retreat on the 21st, we'll be able to continue that conversation. Did
Okay,
I
so
leave
that'll be
anything
the
else out there?
topic. That'll be the topic for that meeting is to talk about the FAC models.
That'll be the main topic. I'm
Okay.
sure there'll be other topics that people may want to talk about.
Okay.
What's the date again? I'm sorry.
October 21st from 9 to noon.
Thank you.
I think we'll leave the time. We shortened up the last one, but I think we'll leave this as is, given the discussion. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought the last meeting we had went really well. There was a lot of good open discussion, and I think it was a good, comfortable situation. So I'm looking forward to the next one as well. So if any of you, we'd like to see as many of you attend as possible. We had quite a good attendance, so it'd be nice to have a good attendance again in October, particularly around this topic.
And depending on where we go with this, where FAC and Board of Health go on this, we could also talk about the timing of the meetings. I know we've been having the retreat work sessions in the morning, though. But given your schedules, a lot of you work, it might be something to bring up with the council and Board of Health about maybe having an occasional, kind of like what we're doing with FAC now, where we get better attendance. The county council has some evening meetings. It might be I think to get better attendance from FAC along with the Board of Health, one of the things I think we need to discuss is the timing of some of those meetings and doing some evening meetings. It doesn't look looks like Councilor Fuentes look like you nodded your head, so
Yeah,
maybe a minute of
first Tuesday of the month is council session. And it's the only evening meeting we have. I believe we are canceling next week's as a result of the holiday weekend. But we may reschedule it, so you might want to check it with Kathleen or Michelle Fenning.
But in the future, we might
In the
want
future.
to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a work session because if we do it at a formal hearing, that's real dip. So we're hoping to do it as well. We'll talk more at the retreat, but doing these as work sessions.
Work sessions every Wednesday, 9 a.m.
All right. As long as we're in updates, does anybody have any updates that they want to share at this point?
I would.
Okay, Lori.
So I really appreciated all that Jonathan shared. One thing I was going to add to that is the BIPOC Youth Summit is actually coming up in November. So folks haven't missed it. It's the 8th and 9th of November. And I will drop the link in the chat if folks have youth or want to share it with youth who are interested. And also want to invite, if you are interested in volunteering in different capacities, feel free to reach out to me and we can connect. We're also, again, being super conscientious of safety for youth and you know, BIPOC youth in particular, and wanting to make sure it's a really welcoming and safe environment for all of them. So anyway, I'll put that in the...
That's a weekend, right?
Correct. It's actually this time it'll be on a Saturday and a Sunday. So Saturday will be workshops and keynote speaker, and Sunday is really about it's a shorter day and it's on community. So I believe Saturday is 10 to 5 and Sunday I think is 11 to 2. So anyway, it should be just an amazing.
Sounds great. And these are for Clark County youth or?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you.
Lori, for those that are,
Sorry, go ahead. You go ahead.
Okay. For those interested in volunteering, should they reach out to you directly or somebody else?
Yes, if you don't mind having them reach to me, that would be great for now. And then I can connect them depending on what area they're interested in. Thank you.
I was just going to say and connect the dots, right? Thank you so much for bringing up volunteering for the BIPOC Youth Summit, because that is also connected to our CHIP and is a civic action, and actually cross-cuts with community connection and care and mental health and education. So it's these events and spaces that are so critical to preserving and stewarding well-being at the individual and neighborhood and community level. So very excited.
Connected to the groundwater too there, right?
That, yeah, it is. Yeah. Volunteering is its own civic participatory domain. And so it's something that we track pretty closely. So
thank you. And I wanted to invite too, I mean, recognizing wanting youth of color to see themselves represented in volunteers. So I, as a very, very white presenting person, I am actually with doing transportation and safety, like as far as with the parking, but also so recognizing there are different ways that people can volunteer and support and create this space for them. So anyway, just gonna put that out there.
Great. Thanks, Lori.
Thanks.
Anybody else have anything? All right. Mallory, did we have anyone from the public tonight?
We do not.
Okay. All right. If we don't have anything else on the agenda or anyone doesn't have something else they want to discuss, we'll adjourn the meeting. And our next meeting will be on September 23rd, and that one will be virtual as well. So have a great rest of your summer, and we're going to get into fall.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.